Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 263, recorded September 6th, 2011. The wheels are just cosmetic. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting, the award-winning web conferencing service for your free 30-day trial. Visit GoToMeeting and use the offer code MacBreak. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic and unlimited backup for your computer files with anytime, anywhere access. For a free trial plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com and use the offer code MacBreak. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing service that gets you paid quickly and makes you look more professional. Get started with a free package at FreshBooks.com. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers your Macintosh needs in great depth, fully, thoroughly, and entirely. Alex Lindsay's back. Welcome from the Pixel Core.
Thank you.
You were at Dreamforce last week. Must have been crazy.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty insane. It was actually, the viewing had jumped a lot, too. It was maybe about almost 10,000 people watching most of the time.
Dreamforce is a big conference that for Salesforce users. Is it sponsored by Salesforce?
It's basically run by Salesforce.
It's conference.
It's as if Macworld was actually run by Apple.
You
know, but they have, you know, vendors there, and of course they had keynotes, and they had a great conversation on business with Eric Schmidt and Mark
Benioff.
Fun.
That would have been very interesting.
It actually turned out to be a great, great interview. It's up on YouTube now.
Cool.
So it was fun.
Well, welcome back. We missed you.
Yes.
We missed you.
It's good to be back.
But Mr. Adidatko is also here, recovered now from the hurricane. He's got frozen pies in the freezer, and he's back on track.
Yeah, it was fun because, like, the first day, I just got my power back, like, on, like, 48 hours ago. And so I'm not kidding. That's the problem with power outages. Sometimes it's not just the things that happen at the substation. It's there's a stress to failure sort of thing that happens. So if you find out that, I guess the transformer at the end of our street was probably going to go bad sometime in the next 2 years. it was when the power came back on experimentally 3 days ago and it blew. Yeah, that was the big cue.
Wow.
So
spewing PCBs all over the street, no doubt.
But hey, I don't live in that end of the street.
So it's okay. Well, that's a week that Irene knocked you out. Well, I'm glad you're back. I really am.
Like, electricity is a good. See, you're supposed to, like, if I were a more perfect specimen, I would be now saying, you know what? It just taught me that sometimes it's good to simplify.
Disconnect.
I got some time to get to know myself a little bit better. Like, you know, I know. Screw you. I want Wi-Fi.
Want power.
I want frozen pizzas that go into an electric oven and become delicious hot pizza. That's what I want.
This whole enterprise, not merely the studio, which we now have a $3,000 a month power bill, but just from here to you at home, you need electricity at every step of the way.
You shut us down.
We'd be out of business. I'd have to be a preacher.
I will have to say, though, in some of my travels, in some of the countries I've been in where the power is less than stable.
Yeah.
I did get kind of into the pattern of the
have to reinvent yourself.
Well, it was kind of nice. It was like, well, there's nothing to do here but have tea.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, I really enjoyed it a lot.
This is a question. Then we'll get to the news. there's plenty to talk about. I just, you know me. I'm Mr. Rat Hole, absent Merlin man. I have to do it. By the way, Merlin was on Twitter a couple weeks ago. Great, it was great to have him back. So I hope we can get him back on MacBreak Weekly soon. If there were no technology, no video, no electricity, what would you be doing for a living, Alex?
I think I would be probably a stone carver.
You like that?
I still
would be working in 3D.
I'd still be modeling in 3D. I just wouldn't have a computer or electricity.
It's more work, but you'd get it done.
It's really hard work. I have to admit, I've tried it, and it would take me a long time to get good at it. I've tried a little bit of it, and it's very hard work.
You were doing. I remember you told me that one of the reasons you went to Africa to do training is that there are people who are stone carvers who think and work in 3D, and it was your kind of thesis that these people would make excellent 3D artists digitally.
We've had some test trainings. We haven't really dug into it as deep
as
I'd like
to,
but the idea is that taking someone's skill set and moving it only about 10%. So we're not retraining them in a completely different thing. You already have people who have incredible visions of how to take something very raw and make it beautiful. And the reality is the computer tools nowadays are oftentimes easier than the stone ones.
Sure. Tensor guy says, if there were no electricity, his job would be inventing electricity. And a Zilla fan in our chat room says, this is a new feature on Twit, post-apocalyptic job hunt. In the post-apocalypse, Andy Yanatko, what would you be?
I'd probably be breaking into people's houses and stealing stuff, because I figured that with no electricity, that's the security system down. People are dark anyway, so as long as you're responsibly quiet, you can probably get at like the water, any livestock, that sort of stuff. It really will be a golden age for that
for burglars.
Yeah. I mean, for those of us who missed like the first dot-com boom, it's like getting it back on the ground floor of the next big.
I'm just thinking, I think I would be a preacher. I don't know. I just think that that's kind of what we do anyway, right?
Yeah.
All is as I have foretold, the dark age that I've...
Exactly.
I am the Cassandra of technology.
Exactly.
I spread my message, but no one listens.
I'd either be a preacher or an actor.
You could have finished that sandwich.
Much the same
in a
things.
Stage with no lights.
Well, you know, they could... Or somebody said... Truckee says, I'd be a flim-flam man. I might. That's not a bad job either. Well, okay, let's talk about the news. And, of course, the big story of last week, and unfortunately it happened right after Mac Break Weekly, so, you know, a couple of days later, so we're kind of last in line to cover it, but I think we should because I think it's relevant to iPhones anyway. The Department of Justice has said we are going to sue to block AT&T's $39 billion acquisition of T-Mobile. This is good, isn't it?
I think that what we need to get out of this at least is a lot of restrictions. If not, you know, it can't just pass right through. There just aren't enough players.
They do say that the judge involved is not a rubber stamp judge, that sometimes she has in fact turned the government down. Most recently in 2001, in the merger of two security companies, SunGard and Comdisco, I think. And she said the barrier to entry into this business was so low that there's no need to worry about shrinking the market. You can't say that about the wireless industry.
Nobody's
going to come along and say, yeah, I'd like to be Leo's phone company.
Well, and if we look at how AT&T treats a lot of folks that are connected, like Sonic is a good example. We have Sonic here. And
this is a small, well, not that small, but medium-sized internet service provider, yeah.
Right, and the big... delays when we want to install something,
right.
Fix something, work with something is AT&T.
They're required by the FCC to cooperate, but only just so they bend it as far as they can, right, before they get in trouble.
And so that leaves us with. I mean, I think that that's what would happen in the. You know, I think that stuff would have to be tightened among a lot of other things. To make
well,
this possible.
Sprint has now joined the suit and says we don't want it either. And of course, Sprint would be the real loser in an AT&T T-Mobile acquisition. It would make AT&T T-Mobile the biggest by far cell phone company. Then there's Verizon, and then way in the back of the pack,
I think it could kill Sprint.
It could. In fact, I think that's probably one of the reasons to do this is because, yeah, there's three, and you could say reasonably, well, there's still competition, but Sprint's so small that they're going to be snapped up at some point. What do you think, Andy?
I'm not sure. I've always seen pluses and minuses to T-Mobile becoming part of AT&T in the sense that you're going to be adding so many more cell antennas to an existing network. And I'm barring the existence of a specific model of phone that's only available on Sprint or T-Mobile, I can't remember the last time that I recommended someone go with a carrier other than Verizon or AT&T.
Yeah. Well, and that's partly the iPhone's fault, isn't it? I mean, some of this we can say is Apple's doing.
Not only that, it really is all about speed and coverage. And Verizon and AT&T really have both those categories knocked. I am in the pleasant position of often traveling with like two or three different phones, two of them that I'm just evaluating. And man, it's for us. I will always get like really great 4G numbers, even 3G numbers on AT&T and Verizon if I've got a T-Mobile phone in my pocket. If I'm lucking out, great. I got great coverage there. The lesser carrier coverage tends to be a little bit better, believe it or not, in the bigger cities than in the smaller cities. But if I'm someplace in like Western Massachusetts, if I'm in a city that dares to be one of the top 20 cities in the country instead of the top 5 cities in the country, things get a little bit dodgier. In principle, I do think that having more companies and more choice is better for consumers, but I do have to be honest and say that when was the last time you recommended someone give Sprint or T-Mobile a chance?
Yeah. Somebody, Squid in our chat room, says he wants AT&T and T-Mobile to merge. I want you to tell me why you think it's a good thing, Squid. And then somebody is saying, well, when would maybe Apple could come in as a white knight? Actually, no, because it's $39 billion. That's more than Apple. That's just right where Apple's cash reserves are.
They've got twice that much.
They have more than that?
They could buy it with cash.
You're right.
They wouldn't even have to do stock. They would just
say, here. And we'll still have $30 billion left. Now, would I don't think it would be the same problem with for the DOJ if Apple bought it.
Well, it might be.
I think Apple wants it.
I think Apple starts marching towards a antitrust issue when you start owning everything from the hardware, the software, and distribution. Yeah.
It would make more sense for Google to do it because, of course, T-Mobile is where most of the Google Experience phones, the plain vanilla Google phones, go. The Nexus One, the G2X.
I think the issue is that there's a lot of baggage with all of these cell companies. I mean, the reality is we don't know where things are going to go in the next 10 years and whether it really matters. I mean, we're moving to a data reality, not a voice reality, where everything's going to be data. And we're not going to be, we're making voice calls, but we're going to be having a
data. Data is where it's at, isn't it?
And so the question is they have all these business models based around voice, and they're still grappling with that. And there's no reason to buy them while they're figuring it out.
Good point.
No, but remember that survey that hit a couple weeks ago about the usage of Android devices versus iPhone users, I thought really tells a story that isn't heard that much, is that there's still we live in a world of smartphones. We live in a world, the three of us and most of our listeners, I think, live in a world where we're carrying an always-on connected internet tablet device in our pockets at all times, and that's the way we like to live. But there's still people who can't really afford to spend like $2,000 a year on these huge, humongous data plans. They really do want a phone that will let them take pictures, text message, and actually talk to their fellow humans. So there really has to be carriers that can offer attractive packages to people who don't want to spend more than $20 or $30 a month. Now, maybe the solution to that is services like Virgin Air,
MVNOs.
Yeah, I mean, but pay as you go, but still, you're not getting that same sort of service. You're not getting that same sort of performance. So to say that, I do agree with you that data is always going to, the importance of data over voice is going to just keep getting bigger and bigger. But I don't think that's going to be a predominating factor for at least another 3 or 4 years. We still have to deal with people who just want a text message and just want to spend 50 or 20.
Who are these people after all?
I have to say,
text messaging is becoming data, really. I mean, it's SMS, which is kind of a weird form of text messaging. The original form of text messaging is being replaced by group messaging through, iMessenger, Apple's iMessenger, BlackBerry Messenger, Facebook Messenger. I mean, everybody's going to data on these because the SMS was so expensive, right?
We actually had a question from someone in the chat room about someone in our audience. In Zimbabwe, how much is data? How much is data and how much is voice? Like how much? What do you use?
How much do you pay for your cell plan? So he uses a Go phone.
No. And so what kind of
phone
do you have?
$5.
Because he's got an Android.
That's cool.
In Zimbabwe. And how much do you do data versus talking on the phone? Data, SMS.
I do more
data. So this is in Zimbabwe. So more data than voice.
Right. And that's the future, isn't it?
Android. That's the. Now he's a very well connected.
Oh, is that how I say it? Oh. Mo is from Zimbabwe, is obviously, because he's here and he's a Pixel Corps member, he's obviously in the data elite, the digital elite in Zimbabwe. Right. Nevertheless, I do think that that's where we're moving, whether we're there. I think Andy's point is we're not there yet, but I think, Andy, you agree. I mean, it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, we're moving in that direction.
Well, in a lot of countries, I mean, whether you're looking at Rwanda or Kenya or Tanzania or Zimbabwe, you're seeing fiber running through all of these countries.
Because they had no infrastructure, so if they're putting it in now, they're going to do the latest. That's where we're at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Because, cell phones, we got cellulized, if that's a word, early.
Right.
And so we have competing technology, CDMA, GSM. We have old infrastructure. It's always a bad thing to be the
first. You got to start somewhere. But I do think this is one of the issues when you deal with all of these private, stakeholders, is that they're all trying to recoup all of their investment and maximize the profit on their investment, and that's why we have all these competing pieces,
right.
And we're still trying to use DSL to pay for the copper that we laid down before, and all of those things, and I think that is a big challenge.
You want to really feel bad, Mr. Huggy, in chat room. That's right, his name. I can't. I'm not making it up.
No, no, no. This is beautiful. We're going to Huggy Bear game. See what the word is on the street.
Mr. Huggy in the UK says he has an iPhone 4. This is in the UK. 200 SMS messages a month, 100 minutes of calling a month, and a gigabyte of data. That's interesting. Only 100 minutes of calling, which is not much, and a gigabyte of data, which is for $31, equivalent of $31 a month. Mr. Huggy, you win.
Well, 200 SMS, though. I mean, I just...
That would get me very far.
It would get me like...
I have to do unlimited SMS. Yeah. So let's talk about the iPhone 5, because I think we're getting close to iPhone 5 day. Kara Swisher, in all things D, says, October, October, October. do you all agree? Is there going to be an Apple announcement in the next couple of weeks and then a shipping day in October? Or do you think we're going to... I don't get invited. Anybody, any invitations, anything?
No, I don't get invited.
I have not been invited anything as of today.
Yeah, that's because you know me. You're off the list and not go.
If having the stink of Leo Laporte on me is part of the cost of knowing Leo Laporte, you know what? That's a price I'm willing to pay.
You got my stink all over you, Andy. Deutsche Telekom.
I walk into a room with Apple and they say, "You have cats, don't you?"
No, it's Leo.
I'm just friends with Leo Laporte.
I have a dander allergy. Deutsche Telekom, whether because they're reading Kara Swisher or because they actually know something, they've started to offer iPhone reservations, iPhone 5 reservations, that's what they're calling it, today, according to Bloomberg. But we don't know what that really means. They say because in anticipation of supply bottlenecks for the device, spokesman Alexander Schmetto said by phone, that's his name, to Bloomberg, they're going to hand out coupons for people who say, "I wish to have not the current iPhone, but the next iPhone," without providing the name or release details of the device. I'll take a coupon, Mr. Schmittal. So it really doesn't say anything. The fact that they're giving that out is meaningless, I guess. Although we are seeing more and more, you know, as always, the drum, boom, 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 the drum beat starts to beat. I just saw on Mac Rumors pictures of iPhone 5 cases, which are very interesting. Now, we don't know. Again, we don't even know if iPhone – is there an iPhone 4S in October and iPhone 5 next June? Is there an iPhone 4S and a 5 in October? We don't know what's going to happen. But they are making cases, which would imply that it's not June. It's sooner. And they're big. They're the kind of cases you'd have a 4.5-inch screen for. And yet we've also seen cases for little 3.5-inch and smaller screens. So which is it?
I'd be shocked if it were a larger screen.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd get so excited if there were
a larger screen.
I mean, yeah. I've used the 4.3-inch screens, as you have, I'm sure, Andy, on the Evo. And I just – don't you love those big screens?
I do. I think there's a real sweet spot there that it is a little bit less convenient. But, man, that little extra real estate, especially on an Android phone where things are pretty cramped to begin with.
Right.
Ordinarily you'd say, well, they would never do a bigger screen without telling developers about that first. But there really is enough resolution on the Retina display to say, you know what? What if we just make it bigger? We'll just make the dots bigger, and it would still be a really, really nice performing little device. I'm not sure if they would like to do a larger format, though. I think that
so
they're
keep
really
the same resolution, but on a bigger screen.
If they were doing that this year, then I think that's
I'm okay with that.
I'm not sure if they would do that this year, though.
Isn't that it, they might? This might be for next June.
It might be for next year.
Yeah.
Because Apple would the Apple that I know and love would want to make a bigger statement about a large screen iPhone than simply, we talked to the parts supplier and he had a whole buttload of these 4-inch screens. We said, okay, well, what kind of deal can you give? Okay, 4-inch. Okay, give us a 4-inch screen. That would be we rethought the phone.
Exactly. AT&T is advancing its upgrade dates, which is not unusual when they want to, you know, get people ready for a new phone.
It also looks like they're preparing for installations going in on the 21st, which would of October, which would
21st of October in the stores.
In the stores.
Why that date? Is that the date they're giving us?
Well, that'd be a Friday before a.
I don't want to wait that long.
Yeah,
that's more than a month.
But doesn't mean that's when the announcement will happen, Leo.
I want the phone though.
I know.
Eight megapixel camera, A5 processor. These are all acceptable. Best Buy is prepping for an October launch as well.
Yeah, This is the sort of stuff that I was talking about a week or two ago.
Yeah.
They're usually, but you don't know for sure what's going to happen. But
right.
if you get one notice about how one store is preparing for a launch, it's like, okay, well, some guy came back from the Ramadan conference room with a slide that he might have misinterpreted. When you see that many people coming from that many sources, you start to, not that there was any mystery that there's going to be a new iPhone this year anyway. But this is the sort of stuff we like to see.
Now, I love this story from last week. And again, this is one that we are late on. I know everybody's heard this already, but it was after we went to press, after we put the show to bed last week. The whole CNET says SFPD investigating iPhone 5 lost at a tequila bar in San Francisco. Then San Francisco Weekly, a weekly newspaper, which with apparently some pretty good reporters, calls the SFPD. This is on Thursday last, and says the SFPD says no, didn't do it. Nope, didn't happen. Then with a little more investigation, they went to the guy who claimed that the police had searched his house, and they'd given him a number. They called that number, and they got Tony Colon, who happens to work for Apple Security. Hey, this is Tony Colon. What do you want? You left your number at my house. About the iPhone 4. Yeah, we'll be right over. So it was Apple investigators. That's pretty much confirmed. And apparently what happened, and the police now are saying, what happened was Apple called us, said, we've got a missing iPhone. We've got GPS coordinates for it. And they dispatched three plainclothes officers. Two or three, it's unclear.
From San Francisco.
From San Francisco Police mm-hmm. Department to join two Apple investigators. Knocked on this guy's door and went. And now here's where it gets a little dicey. The guy claims that they all identified as SFPD. Two of them go in.
I think later in the article, I think they called him again, and he said he's not sure if they all identified
He believed them to be.
But
he said, I would never have let them in if I'd thought that they weren't the police department, but I was trying to cooperate with the police investigation. SFPD says our three plainclothes officers stayed outside while the two Apple investigators went in. The guy also says that they threatened him, saying, is everybody here legal? You could be in a lot of trouble. They're talking to Sergio Calderon, whose house this is. They searched the guy's house. They searched his computers, found no traces of the iPhone 5, and left. Now there's reasonably some heat on the San Francisco Police Department to explain how they helped, why they helped, what's going on. I think if I had lost, in fact, I know, because remember we saw that blog of the guy whose Apple Mac laptop was stolen, and he had pictures of the thief using it, sitting on a couch. He had to actually create a blog to get the police, San Francisco police, to even help him, and finally shamed them into it. So clearly Apple has a little more clout. What do you think? I feel like this is not really redounds more to the shame of the police department than of Apple itself.
It does. I'm trying to figure out if they had a GPS location that it was
how'd
in
they,
the house.
How'd they not have the phone?
How did he not have the phone?
Maybe he threw it out the window. We don't know.
But it was, yeah, I mean, but the...
What problem? Here's what happened.
Here's the issue is that you have someone. The only thing I'll say about this, and I do think that they mishandled this, but I will say that they had a GPS location of that phone at his house.
Right.
Now, they may not have been able to find it because the GPS is not accurate enough, but he can't start acting like he's all innocent because if they have a GPS of that phone at his house, it's at his house. I mean,
wait a minute. You really think that that's conclusive evidence that this guy had the phone? How would you know?
I think they were entering this conversation with a fair bit of certainty that it was at the location.
Sounds like it.
Because how else would they have that phone's GPS location if it was they're not spoofing a GPS location of the phone. I mean
Calderon says he never had it. What do you think, Andy?
So many variables here, depending on who's telling the truth, all the people who have reasons to lie on all sides. There are good reasons to lie about what you're doing here. The other piece of information was that some of these news reports are saying that that the homeowner admitted that he was in the bar where that phone had been lost. I'm trying to find.
I haven't seen that one. That thickens the plot, doesn't it?
If that's true, because I've been trying. When this first hit a few days ago, I was trying to call around just to find out because this is such a he said, then they said. And then also, there's also the problem of when cops come, I've never had this experience, fortunately, but when cops, I imagine that when cops come to your door unexpectedly and ask to look around, there's a lot of adrenaline, you're right. saying a lot of things. But then a day later, when you're starting to piece things together, how much detail did you lose in your memory, and how much are you just simply, now that you're, you know, your brain chemistry is starting to come back online. So if we go to the generic stuff here, I really think, if I wish that Apple prosecuted every single lost device as energetically as this. The official store policy is that you can file a police report, you can report the serial number of your iPhone stolen. If that person, if someone finds your iPhone and comes to any Apple store to get service on it, they don't, Apple is really not going to do anything about it. Whereas right here, we got the full force of the law or the non-law coming at the. At
people. I found the reference that you're talking about, Andy. It's from SF Weekly. Yeah. This is during an interview with SF Weekly. Sergio Calderon, he's 22 years old, did admit that he had been at Cava 22, the tequila bar, over the weekend. And so he said, yeah, I was there.
Yeah. And there was a GPS location.
And there was a GPS location.
So, and what I want to say is I want to make sure it's clear. I think that Apple and SFPD mishandled this, miscommunicated, and should not have been able to go into his house. I'm sorry if I'm fumbling.
As I said, I'm just getting used to the idea of electricity back on. the thing is, Apple acted appropriately if they had these two pieces of information that this person was at that bar. The phone is telling the Apple that, yes, I am at this house. It's okay for them to coordinate with local law enforcement to see if they can get access to that place and take a look around. However, this is a reminder of something that I think the majority of people just can't get behind, that if a police officer comes to your house, if a police officer with a badge and everything comes to your house without a warrant and asks to get inside your house, unless they have, really, they don't have any, you have the ability to say, I'm sorry, unless you get a warrant, I'm not letting you in. There are a lot of different cases in which, really, there's nothing they can do about it. So mistake number one was letting people inside your house and saying, yes, please, look through my entire house for this thing that I'm going to say that I don't have.
Right.
The second thing is that, and this is another really difficult thing for innocent people to think of, is saying, I'm not going to answer any questions without a lawyer present. You're not arresting me for anything. You don't have a warrant for anything. I don't have to tell you where I was. I don't have to say yes or no whether or not I have this phone.
My wife and I have this fight all the time because I saw, as you obviously did, that really excellent lecture at a law school. I can't remember which law school, by a lawyer who says, do not talk to the police. It will never be of any benefit to you to in any way talk to the police. You should clam up.
I kind of disagree with that because I've known a lot of state troopers, not in a professional sense, but there are a lot of problems where you're just talking to these people socially about how they do their jobs, it's like, you know what, I have a hunch there's something wrong with this car. If you let me search it, I'm going to apologize for holding up. I'm going to let you go in 10 minutes. If you say no, it's then my call whether or not I'm going to take this to the next level, because I don't have the ability to simply demand to search your car. I do have the ability to hold you here by the side of the road for X amount of time while I wake up the right judge to give me the authority to turn out to...
Well, and that was probably Calderon's thinking is, well, I don't have it. I know I don't have it. There's no evidence.
This goes away in 10 minutes if I just let him
in. Yeah, let him in. And in fact, it did go away. And apparently...
I would never have let him have access to my computers, though. Never.
He let him into his car, his home, his computer. In fact, you know, of course, they're looking for evidence that at any point he'd linked the phone to his iTunes. Found none of that. There was no evidence at all. They offered him $300. They said, we'll buy that phone from you and no questions asked. And then Tony gives him the card and walks out. Tony's the Apple investigator is a former police officer. So probably carries himself. In fact, I was looking at his LinkedIn. SF Weekly has his LinkedIn and Facebook page. He looks like a cop. So you probably believe it.
And if you had what it sounds like happened is that you had you had two cops say, we're here from the police department, can we search? And he said yes to those two cops,
and the other two other
people walked in.
Right.
You know, and it was, you know, it was one of those things that you have to be careful of. The other thing you have to be careful of when you just let people come in and look around, the search warrant has very specific things they're allowed to look for, and if they find anything, you know, they it really is it restricts what they can actually do there. So so I think that it is important you know, to think about those things. But like Andy said, if you just flat out say you can't come in without a warrant, you usually turn a whole lot of switches on, you know that are there that weren't there before you did that.
I would have done what Calderon did, but you're right. There's a big question that's raised by the fact that he admits he was at Cava 22,
and
the GPS went to his house.
Those two things.
Now, sometimes the GPS is wrong. I've seen a big circle, but that's kind of a weird coincidence.
It's not that big of a circle.
Well, it could be. At first, a couple of things happen, right? The way that Find My iPhone works is it remembers your last GPS coordinate. So probably if the phone's turned off, there's no more GPS coordinates, it was the last coordinate. Now, what if the bad guy – okay, I'm giving you the what if, that if I were the defense attorney, I would absolutely bring up. Sure, the bad guy was walking by the house. As he's walking by, he presses the button to turn the phone off. That's the last GPS coordinate. And it's a big – it's, you know, it could be 3 meters, but you've seen 20, 50, 60 meters, right? It could be smack dab in the living room if that's where he turned off the phone.
I don't
There's
think –
There's no – that it is not
– And we have no
that
idea.
Reasonable doubt. I know this because I was on a jury once. reasonable doubt that he didn't have the phone in his house.
Oh no! But they're not prosecuting me. You know,
no, they're not.
They're not looking for reasonable doubt at the moment. So that's the issue. But I think that I have a hard time believing that they would just come to someone's house if they had a really big circle.
Right. Because you know, like, as you well
maybe
know,
looking at. I mean, I just don't
if
think
you're
they
innocent,
would.
You have nothing to fear from the police.
I didn't say that.
Maybe we're not giving Apple enough credit here. Maybe this is just, you know what? This is the most embarrassing thing that could happen to us in 2011, that we lost another phone. What if we do a ham-handed, overbearing search just to obscure the fact that we lost another damn phone?
Well, they in fact have a listing now, a job listing for Apple Product Security Manager for somebody who will keep an eye on all of these new testing products and make sure that they don't get lost ever again.
Phones getting lost. I think they get lost and no one
nobody
notices.
Cares. And I got to point out that
it's
really
like, it's like finding a nickel on the sidewalk.
Yeah,
it's not worth bending
over. They're a dime a dozen. But I got to point out, we're all going to know all the details of this phone in 4 weeks.
Well, and
it's ridiculous.
Well,
I mean,
and Apple, and I think that Apple, this is a good lesson for SFPD and Apple to realize that anything they do related to this is going to be heavily publicized, and they really needed to cross their T's and dot their I's a little bit better than they did here.
Now, it is up to Calderon. This SFPD has said it is up to Calderon. If he files a complaint, we will investigate. He has, as of this time, not fired a complaint. So I think that this – this isn't law. We're just rank speculation. He picked up the phone. He had the phone. Turned the phone off. Realized, oh, crap. And threw it out the window as far as he could, either when they knocked on the door or before then. And now the guy is not going to press charges. He doesn't want to have anything more to do with it. He's done. And if I were Apple, I'd look around in the vicinity. I'd search those dumpsters and rooftops in the neighborhood.
Right. I have a very hard time believing that someone at that bar would also have a GPS location that is very close to their house.
Can you flush an iPhone down the toilet?
I don't know.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Not in California.
I don't think it'll play back again.
You know, our toilets were backed up over the weekend. mysteriously healed. Because we found out a plumber on Labor Day is $200 an hour. So we decided to let it rest, and it came back all by itself.
Maybe that's what I would be if we didn't have any electricity.
I think Jason Howell stole the iPhone. No, he says no. He denies it. Looks like Apple will be globally the number one. Well, I don't know. I'm looking at this chart. I can't make head or tails of this. The number one.
The blue is last year. The red is this year.
Thank you.
And
what is the line?
The line is
the zippity doo-dah line. I don't even understand this. This is crazy.
Year over year. It's year over year growth percentage. Mm-hmm. So it's Apple's jumped 81%.
Oh, I see.
And Nokia's dropped 25%.
Apple's up 81.9%. Nokia down 25%. Samsung 191%. They're number two. But Apple probably will hold the title for top
and according to Apple, the Samsung jump has been all a ruse.
I think the reason Samsung said, all right, you're going to sue us. Let's see the iPhone 5 and the iPad 3, because I think the iPhone 5 is going to look just like a Galaxy. That's what I think. What do I know? Let's take a break. We're going to come back with more. Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay. We'll talk about patents, the Kindle tablet, MG's seen one, and some Lion information, too, since we are called Mac Break Weekly. But first, let's talk about GoToMeeting, the award-winning online meeting service that we personally here at Twit use all the time for our meetings, even before HD Faces. But now, whoa, HD Faces just brings this whole thing to life. GoToMeeting has added video to their already super high-quality screen sharing. And let me tell you, the quality of the video is so crystal clear. You know, all you need is an internet connection and a camera, and you're going to get this is what it looks like. You have the screen sharing below, and then people, your attendees' faces above. Just seeing somebody's nod or smile or grimace, see them fold their arms, it makes negotiations easier, makes sales easier, makes training easier. They've won about every award for web conferencing in the industry. Now that they got HD Faces, I think it's just a killer, killer app. The new customers say GoToMeeting. I'm giving you some quotes here from emails received. Simple and smart. Dynamic. So happy we switched. You can switch too for Mac or PC absolutely free for the next 30 days. If you visit GoToMeeting.com right here, GoToMeeting.com, click that orange try it free button. And the offer code for Mac Break Weekly is just Mac Break. So do put that in, though, because then we'll get credit, and those guys over at Twit won't.
I have to say, you know, over the last, as we were getting ready for Dreamforce, you know, I think I
bet you did a lot of these.
I did a lot of GoToMeetings. I did a lot from a lot of other unnamed ones that we'll lay out, and it was clear how much better the GoToMeeting environment was.
Not to mention affordable. I mean, it's $49, including the video a month.
It's great.
And some of these other guys, tens of thousands of dollars.
And they were not as good.
And not as good.
Yeah, I was like, you know, you really, I can get you an offer code.
Well, you know, you have these, for so many years, you had dedicated hardware and software in meeting rooms for telepresence. And now with computers, the GoToMeeting was kind of smart. They said, well, we're going to kind of avoid the hardware thing, be all software, because as computers and cameras get better, we're going to get better and better. And in fact, that's where they've really benefited now. I mean, every laptop now has a great HD camera built into it. And if you don't, it's $50 to buy the Logitech, C510 is the one we like. And it looks fantastic. Anyway, enough of that. GoToMeeting.com. Try it today. Use the offer code MacBreak so that we get credit for it. Andy Rubin. I like this. This is another one of those them patent things, right? This is according to Apple. Apple is, of course, in getting the ITC to investigate the Samsung thing, the Android thing. And actually, this is now against HTC. And according to Apple, Andy Rubin, the guy who runs Android for Google, and by the way, who started at Apple, admits, here, I'll read from Apple's filing. Mr. Rubin began his career at Apple in the early 1990s and worked as a low-level engineer, blah, 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 blah. At the exact time, the inventors of the 263 real-time API patent was being conceived and developed. They said he actually was there while that patent was being developed. It's thus no wonder that the infringing Android platform used the claim subsystem approach of the 263 patent that allows for flexibility of design and enables the platform to be highly customizable and expandable, as HTC touts. Boy, if I'm the judge reading this, that's... And what they're really saying is that Android... And Andy Rubin didn't start thinking about Android at General Magic, which he left Apple to go to found, or Danger, but in fact, at Apple. So, very interesting factoid. I didn't realize Andy Rubin worked at Apple that long ago, and in fact worked in an area where he would have had access to this real-time API that they're suing over, HTC over. This one's pretty compelling. I would wonder, now... Apple's not suing Google.
Yet.
Yet. But this article that I'm reading from Foss Patents, which is a blog that covers software patent news, makes a good point. If Apple sued Google directly over this 263 patent, there could be an injunction against Android sales.
And this is really, I mean, I think this is probably a great subject for Twill.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure Denise will be covering it.
You know, because I think that the issue is that the only thing I can think of is why you wouldn't sue Google directly is you start building up a bit of case.
Here's an interesting thing. Apple has sued Motorola over the 263
right.
patent. So this gets even more complicated with the potential Google acquisition of a Motorola. If ITC, according to this Foss patents, this is Florian Muller's IP blog, if the ITC upholds the initial determination that the patent is valid and infringed by Android, Google should be very concerned. An ITC decision doesn't bind the federal courts, but the likelihood of Apple being able to enforce this patent and thereby have Andy Rubin declared a willful infringer of a patent developed at Apple while he worked there by the people he worked for would be considerably greater if the ITC does decide against Andy Rubin. That's very interesting. That's quite an accusation. I'm not a big patent. I don't like patent law as regards to software, but I have to say in this case, this could be,
you know, I almost became a patent lawyer.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was thinking about
it. You missed your shot. You could have been rich by now.
I just don't like reading that much. Just like I looked at all those law books.
We've said
my
this
dad's
before,
law firm,
but
and I was like, no.
Listen to the This American Life show on patent software patents. It's really, really good, and it will turn you beet red with indignation. Now, speaking of indignation, I'm not thrilled about this. Apple got the German authorities to pull the Samsung Galaxy Tab from the trade show, the IFA trade show. Samsung was about to show its new 7.7-inch Galaxy Tab, and all the samples were removed from view and out of reach of public and press. The posters and insignia were stripped out of their booth, even though they had a sign on it that said, not for sale in Germany, because, of course, it isn't for sale in Germany, because Samsung is subject to an injunction issued in Germany prohibiting it from selling the Galaxy Tab due to a similarity with Apple. Apple did get a second injunction from a Dusseldorf court on September 2nd, blocking the sales and promotion of the Galaxy Tab 7.7. And because of this injunction, Apple's PR people, maybe that same Tony, went to the booth and said, get rid of that. I'll give you $300 for that poster.
So you're saying that Apple has its own Luca Brasi.
It is kind of take the tab, leave the cannoli. Wow. I can't think of this happening before, police would go to a trade show floor and say, get rid of that. You can't show that.
It makes you wonder a little bit what Apple's end game on all this patent stuff is. Is it to actually prevent these devices from being sold, or is it to simply negotiate a license fee per unit so that Android is free to be as successful as they want to do, so long as they're for every unit they sold, Apple gets $5 or $10.
Right. They're playing hardball. I mean, there's no question about that, right?
I mean, even that would be a huge win, not just for the $5 or $10 they get. I think that Apple would want that sort of victory just to put another $5 or $10 into the unit cost of every single Android device.
Well,
sold.
Microsoft already did. Remember, Microsoft gets $5 or $10 for every Android phone.
I don't think Apple has any interest in licensing fees. I think that what they want to do is... I don't even think they need to kill it. I think they just want to trip it up. They just want to stall it while the iPad continues to move forward. And
ironic because it's like when a football team's winning, you know, 45-0,
but
scoring
Apple lost this extra touchdown. Apple lost this game before in the 80s. I mean, I think
they have
a history of things getting caught up. So I think that the issue that they have is they have the next platform. I mean, the iPad. They have the best hardware from your pocket to the trucks, quote unquote. you know, out there right now. People are buying their they're buying these little computers, our little 11-inch,
right?
You know, up to the the Mac Mini.
Half a million units a month.
Yeah, the iMacs, everything. They're hitting on all cylinders. And the thing is that nobody else is able to catch up. The closest thing to it are these Galaxy, these Galaxy Tabs.
Well, and I don't know if they're selling that one. You know, the we saw some sales figures for the first 7-inch Galaxy Tab, and they said out of a million made, they were only able to push maybe a couple hundred thousand.
You know, the question is all this uncertainty that Apple's creating around the patents, around all the other pieces, are they going to be continue to be supported? Are they going to continue to be sold? I think affects sales. And I think it's, so the thing is that people are kind of in a, I'm not sure if I should buy into this right now because I'm not sure if it's still going to be around.
It's like if you've stomped on a snake, you want to cut off its head too, just in case.
Exactly. Well, the thing is that I think that Apple, I think it makes, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with it, but I do think that Apple, just stalling people so that it can get far enough ahead, then you end up in an iPod situation where it becomes more and more difficult to catch up.
Right.
You know, once you fall a
critical
certain distance
mass.
Behind,
yep.
Apple reaches critical mass, and right now, I think it gets harder and harder for other companies to catch up.
As we've said, this lawsuit is global. I mean, this one's a German court. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're suing worldwide. In Australia, a judge in Australian federal court said Apple isn't presenting enough evidence to justify an injunction against Samsung's tablet in Australia. So she says, I need to see sales data. You have to show me that the iPad's sales have been hurt by Samsung's devices. Now, this must be something unique to Australian law. Again, and there's a question for Denise Howell. But I don't believe you have to prove that, do you?
I think you have to prove damages.
That there's damages.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's another Denise question more than me. But
Apple
claims
that Samsung's device illegally copies the iPad and should not be offered for sale. I would think just, trade dress infringement and patent infringement would be enough to halt it. You don't have to say, I mean, if I steal, your shirt design and make your shirt, you don't have to prove that it's costing me sales if you stole the design.
Right.
Right? So I'm not sure. It depends, I guess, what Apple is suing over. I guess Apple, apparently this is the case. Now I'm looking at a little further down in the CNET article. A key point in Apple's argument is that Samsung's allegedly infringing device is hurting iPad sales. Samsung denies it.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Apple.
That's just filling out part of the paper that you're typing on when you're calling.
And not only that, they're meany, meany, stinky faces, and they're hurting our sales.
I think it's hard to figure out what they're doing here. Part of it is it's possible that they're acting out on principle, saying that we have a gold mine here. That gold mine our lead could evaporate over the next 4 or 5 years, just in principle, if we see weakness in another product or their legal defense, we're going to go after it. If they're actually trying to do something actually quite tactical, which is to say, we fear the 7-inch new version of the Galaxy Tab, we want to keep it off the market as long as possible.
But do they really need to fear it?
That makes no sense.
No,
right?
I don't think. In fact, Apple's sales, iPad sales, up 183% for third quarter, Q3 over 2010. But apparently Apple is making the argument that tablet's going to killing us.
And I think that there is some, I would hope to say that this is not personal, but I think there is an incredible
feels
amount of bitterness
like
from Steve Jobs.
Feels like
related to he saw Google as a partner and he saw them encroach on his
that's
his space.
Yeah.
And I would not, I think that some of this may be personal. We're gonna hit you in every gun that we have at every moment because you came into our space when we partnered with you.
Wow.
I have to say that if I got into a partnership with a company and they did what Google did, I would expend, and I had the money that Apple had.
Well, what did Google do?
I would flip every switch.
Yeah, but what did Google do?
Because they partnered, and they started partnering with how they're going to be incorporated into the phone, and they had Google Maps on there, and they were working on how they could be integrated, and they were working together on all of this stuff. And Apple had the impression. This is old news, but Apple has the impression that they're partnering up with Google, building up all those pieces, and then Google opens their own phone. And I have to admit, I'm kind of one of those people that I would spend every dime that I needed
to pound them at every
moment.
The phone was in development before Apple's.
And they should have talked to Apple about
that. I had this discussion with some people on Google Plus after I posted something about this, where Android was being built well before the iPhone, but they were showing off prototypes that made it look like a BlackBerry.
Right.
You can really draw a very sharp line between this is what the Android prototypes looked like before the iPhone was shown off. This is what they all look like after that. But yeah, I think you might have a point there, Alex. Because remember, there was that famous line from, was it a year and a half, 2 years ago? It got out that Steve Jobs was talking to employees and described Google point blank as out to kill Apple and out to kill the iPhone.
Yeah.
So that could basically put them into, you know, Warriors 3 mode.
He's not alone in thinking that. Apparently, you know, Paul Thurrott at Windows Weekly continually says that Google is dumping Android. They're giving Android away, much the same as Microsoft itself dumped Internet Explorer, gave it away for free to kill Netscape. Android is being dumped by Google to corner the market on smartphones. Do you believe that's the case? I think Microsoft does.
I think it's a valid argument that is the direction that they're going. And I think that if I were Google, I would do the same thing. It's just that if I were, you know, but I do think that they played dirty pool with Apple early on, and Steve Jobs is not someone to do that with. You know, because, you know.
No, we know.
You
know,
and that's that. And I think that what they're paying for now is that Apple will use every gun in their arsenal to attack them. You know, and they're going to continue to go down this path, and they're going to, you know, and I think it may end up killing Android, because I think that they probably have some patent stuff that, if, you know, that is probably going to eventually cause massive damage to their outcome.
I honestly think that Android has already wandered into the tar pit, and now it's up to them to either get themselves out of that tar pit or become a museum exhibit in 50 to 60 to 70,000 years.
It's funny.
Because
I was at La Brea tar pits just this weekend.
Yeah. They rescued that adorable little squirrel. Wasn't that good?
Yeah.
But that's a side issue. Don't want to go down a squirrel hole. Company after company is now just being very, very deliberate about forking Android. When you look at the adoption of Android 3.0, it's a very, very weak part of the graph. And now there are two different companies who said, you know what? I know that we were backing Android to begin with. We decided that we're going to take your lovely V8 engine, but we're going to build something brand new around it. We're going to take the very, very core of Android, but our hope is to build a tablet or a device or a phone around it that makes people not even aware that there is anything Android going in. We want to have our own app store. We want to have our own UI. This has been a steady progress for the process for the past year and a half. I think that Google is really in the point where they can have 80% of the market share eventually, but no value of that market share, because no consumer will ever walk into a store and say, "Give me an Android phone. I've heard that Google Android is a really great operating system."
No. Yeah, I think it's changing a little bit. I'm hearing that more and more, actually, from people call the radio show. I use the radio show as a barometer of normal people and their feelings. And you're right. I mean, in fact, I even say to a lot of these people, just get an iPhone. But more and more people, normal people, are calling up saying, "I really want an Android phone." "No, I don't want an iPhone. I really want an Android phone." So there's some shift going on, obviously, with 550,000 activations a day. Somebody's buying this stuff. And it's more than just price. I don't think it's like an also-ran. I don't know if that's fair to say that anymore.
I see. I'm not sure. If I were to put three different phones, I'd put an HTC phone, a Samsung phone, and let's say a Nook ebook reader. Would people have any awareness that there is shared DNA between these three things? If someone became really, really comfortable with their HTC branded Android phone, if they were to have to deal with a Samsung phone for the next 3 or 4 days, how long would it take them to get used to all the differences in UI and all the differences between where the apps are and how things operate? I really think that Android has a huge, huge problem. I think this is a case study in the idea that open is great, but when you decide deliberately to make an operating system or software open, you are explicitly saying, "I don't care if I have any say in the direction of this thing going forward." Because success will never, ever, ever equate to your greater control over this part of the market. It will always mean that you can, and on your obituary, the first paragraph will say he wrote the core code of Android that powers over 93% of all handsets, but it will not translate into more power.
I want to take a little break. When we come back, I'm just going to throw this rumor at you guys and see and let you shoot it down.
I believe it. I endorse it 100%.
I don't believe it. I think it's crazy.
It keeps coming up. And my friend Cedric Ingrand, who is out here from France, he does a very good TV show about technology in France on TCI called Plein Écran. He was on Twitter this week. He said, "I'm thinking I should come back as soon as the Apple invites go out Not because he's interested in the next iPhone. Of course he is. But he says, I think, A, this will be Steve's last appearance, and I think he's going to come out for one more thing, and I think all evidence points to it being an Apple television. Let's find out what the panel thinks. Andy Anacco, in a bit. Andy Anacco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps, and I'm giving you time to compose your thoughts, gentlemen. While we talk about Carbonite.com, backup done right. I'm a Carbonite fan. In fact, so much so that when Abby went to college, or her freshman year last year, and of course with a fresh, brand new MacBook, 13-inch MacBook, now I would send her with an Air. But at the time, I sent her with a 13-inch MacBook, because the Air hadn't come out yet. It was going to come out in October.
Not that you're bitter.
Not that I'm bitter. She said, this year I want an Air. Okay. But guess what? It's going to have Carbonite on it, because I don't want to get that call. Daddy, I deleted the my term paper. Is there any way to get it back? Because I wanted to be ready for that, especially for a laptop. But just think about all the personal information you have on your hard drive. Is it backed up automatically? Is it safe? Is it on a hard drive right next to the computer? So if somebody comes and steals everything, they'll get that too? Or if there's a fire? Yeah, you got to.
I have two kids.
Yeah.
They're 2 and 4.
Yeah.
They'll
play destroy
with the
computer. Stuff. They'll destroy stuff. Yeah. You know, I think human error is really the real risk here, frankly. Carbonite, over the last few years, has restored, get this, 7 billion with a B, 7 billion files. That's really amazing. Those are 7 billion files that would be lost forever, ever otherwise. Carbonite is for Macs or PCs. It backs up your files privately, encrypted, so only you can see them. In fact, It will encrypt on any open access point, too, so you don't have to worry about where you are when it's backing up. Whenever it's online, it's backing up safely and securely for less than $5 a month, unlimited. You don't have to worry about tiering either, because it just takes all the stuff on your internal drive and backs it up for you automatically. It's really, really great. $59 per year per computer, unlimited online backup, and you can try it free right now, Mac or PC. With the offer code MacBreak, go to Carbonite.com. You don't need a credit card. And by the way, this is the Carbonite Home. There's also a business product, but let's start with the Carbonite Home. And make sure you just in here, just right in here, you go M-A-C-B-R-E-A. Oops. M-A-C-B-R-E-A-K. There you go. So now I can start my free trial. It is amazing. I have to warn you, they do not have line support yet. This is it's taken the people who do the low-level file stuff a little longer to get that Lion support out there. So if you're using Lion, hold off a bit. But I'm sure within the next week or so we'll have an announcement for you. Meanwhile, XP, Vista, Windows 7, or any Intel-based Mac with OS up to OS 10.6, 15 days free of Carbonite with the offer code MacBreak. And by the way, if you decide to buy, you can get 14 months for the price of 12 if you use the offer code MacBreak again. Carbonite's just the best way to back it up. Got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Oh, and did I mention that it's also offline storage? So if you have it backed up on Carbonite, they have an iPhone, an iPad app, BlackBerry, and Android too. And, of course, on your computer, you log onto your Carbonite account with any device, and there's all your stuff. So it's also offline cloud-based storage. Unlimited. All right. So, I have to say, I've really been thinking about this, and we heard this rumor, I think it was Jason Calacanis, who was the first 2 years ago to say Apple will be doing a television. We keep hearing that rumor again and again and again. I don't get it. I don't think there's any reason. Jean-Louis Gasset brought it up again yesterday in his Monday letter. He's, of course, a former Apple president and the guy who did BOS, knows a little bit about the business. He says, I have been very skeptical about this for several reasons. One, because TVs don't get updated as much as computers. Two, who's going to carry a 15-inch display to the Apple Genius and say it's broken? Three, it's a difficult business in general, he says, but I just feel like it's about to happen. Andy, you think there's any, the Gasset has any merit in what he's saying at this point?
It's just, there's so many analysts who are saying that they've heard this from so many sources that they trust. It's the sketchiest kind of rumor, and it's only getting any velocity by all the mass, so to speak.
Right.
I can only see. I agree that I just don't see this happening for so many different reasons. And it's the same three reasons that everybody's coming up with, that the margins are so very thin. that people don't necessarily look to replace. They look to replace a phone every couple of years, a computer every 2 or 3 years. They replace their TV when it stops working or when Mary Hart starts looking purple on Entertainment Tonight.
Right.
Is she clear? I don't know. I only see, the last time I saw Mary Hart was on the telethon 2 days ago. That's when I realized, oh, she's still in the business. I'm sorry, but I digress. The only way I could possibly see this happening is if they decide to build something brand new that could be described as a television set, but does things that TVs don't do. The same way that Apple was, all the rumors about Apple developing a tablet were true, but they decided to do things in a brand new way so that it really had no overlap, very little overlap with the way tablets have been done before. I could definitely see it if they said that if you've got an iPhone, if you've got an iPad, this is the TV you want, and you were going to want to even spend $150 over the normal cost of a 42-inch TV to get it. If it ran iOS apps, I'm not even talking about 2 days after it's released, they break into the ROMs, people break into the ROMs and realize that, oh, well, actually, it is running iOS, and it can technically run apps if there are a way to get on it. I mean that if it were released with an app library, not only that, but also with Netflix is on board, Hulu is on board, ESPN is on board. And if they decided to put a touch screen in front of it, not a huge, slick, 1,000-point multi-touch display like they have on the iPad, but some way that I could simply walk up to it, touch something, and get a better interactive experience that I would get with the usual 5-clicky remote. So that's the only circumstance under which I could possibly see Apple getting into the TV market. Otherwise, I just don't know why they'd even bother.
Gene Munster of Piper Jaffray said, based on information from component manufacturers, an Apple TV is in the works. The company has reportedly also made a mystery expenditure of $3.9 billion on component parts. I don't know. This stuff is so silly. I want to go on record saying no freaking way.
So we have brought this up a couple times in the last couple of years, and I have constantly, you know, believe that they're going to build a TV. I think that the TV is the last bit of this puzzle.
Right.
I think that
it completes the living room.
It completes the living room. I think they put the iSight camera into it, and it changes the way FaceTime works. I think that, you know, having the Apple TV does not quite have that total experience that Apple wants to provide without having, you know, all those pieces into it. I think that I do not think it made sense when they didn't have a strong iOS, when they hadn't figured out the iOS development. I think as a hobby, Apple TV allowed them to figure all of these pieces out. I do think an iOS in a TV, especially if they wrap it tightly with the kind of wrapping we've already seen with the Apple TV, you know, with your iPad, with your iPhone, so that you're able to control it, that becomes a very, very tight integration that I think is going to be very compelling. And I think that Apple has figured out how to make a lot of these units. You know, they're no longer the super expensive pieces. Companies are having a hard time matching price and performance with the iPhone, with the iPad, with their 11-inch. You know, I'm not saying it'll be a cheap monitor. But I think there's a lot of people out there that would buy them. I think there's a lot of people that would see that integration. And I think that talking about that in October before Christmas would, you know, and football and
that's the time to announce it.
It's the right time to do it.
It also would make sense, perhaps, that Steve Jobs would want to
finish it off
and leave Apple with a product that is another category that could, you know, if you've got the iPad's a pretty good legacy. As is the iPhone and the iPod and all this, but one more thing.
And if you had a 2048 by, you know, I don't know what that would be. I don't think it'll be a 4:3 aspect ratio like a 1536, but a 2048 by whatever would be slightly higher resolution than a regular TV.
So it's not really a TV.
It can match the resolution of a Retina display on a new iPad.
It's a lean back display, maybe of some kind.
Yes. I would just like to see anybody, in addition to citing analysts, in addition to citing component orders, I wish that anybody could explain a case in which, especially for Apple, packaging an entire TV would make more sense to them than simply reducing the price of the Apple TV by $20.
Right.
But the thing is that if I was Apple, I'd do both. I'd have an Apple TV for people who don't want to buy that, but they're already
seems
in
like Apple TV gives you 99% of it, though, without getting into this.
But you don't have, for instance, the iSight. I really think that the iSight changes FaceTime. The iSight, having a permanent fixture, part of the TV, that's ready to work, you know, that's integrated into the iOS and allows people to, I mean, that's Jetsons, you know, and that's, you know, I mean, that is the Jetsons at that point, you know, and the thing is that without that, they're never going to get the TV manufacturers to integrate that tight enough with Apple TV to do that. All right. And I think that does tie in a whole lot of elements.
Raven Lee, and I posited this question on Google Plus to see what people would say. Very interesting conversation, as usual, on Google Plus. Raven Lee says, Apple should just buy Sony.
Well, Apple already makes TVs. They're called iMacs. I mean, the thing is that it's not like they don't know how to make displays. I mean, they've been making 30-inch displays. They've been making 27-inch iMacs. They've been doing a lot of that stuff already. I mean, this is not – they don't need to buy anybody to do this. They already know how to build displays.
A lot of people had the point of view that Bob Obringer did, which is, well, it's easy to say it's a dumb idea. Just, and in fact, I've said a number of things Apple's done as a dumb idea, including the retail stores. He says – you know how that usually turns out. If they do it, it will only be when they can bring something completely new to the table with an experience nobody has seen before. If they release a TV, he has faith, as many Apple fans do, that it will be a killer because Apple wouldn't do it.
And we'll buy it because that's what we do.
It's sui generis, yeah, right. It's a tautology.
Yeah.
Apple will do it if they can own the market. I as usual, my vision is way more limited than Steve Jobs' vision. And I can't see how it would
work. But people
work.
Said that. People said that they can't understand why Apple's getting into the phone business. There's no margin.
I agree.
There's no,
I said the
you
same
know, the
thing.
Whole thing is
I said
all,
exactly
you know.
The same thing. Yeah. You know, they'd be crazy. I remember saying this on this show. They'd be crazy to do a phone. They'd be crazy to go with Intel. They'd be crazy to start a retail chain. I mean,
okay. There's one difference here. Back when we were thinking about Apple being, well, I don't think I ever said that Apple would be crazy to do a phone, but. Remember that after the iPhone was released, we knew that Apple had this thing called iOS.
Right.
Now when we're thinking about these Apple TV, Apple Space. Now we have to come up with a new fake name for it. When we're talking about Apple TV, we're talking about Apple Space TV, not Apple TV.
Right.
but now we know that there's iOS. We know that not only that, but we also have this nice little hockey puck box that will adapt any TV to run iOS. I'm still not getting it. Even with all that knowledge, I'm still not getting it. And part of my disconnect is that a TV audience is a totally different audience.
Well, but that's why they want to do it, right?
If you're dealing with a consumer that will get the idea of an Apple TV, that I'm going to spend $150, $200 premium over the cost of anything I can get on Amazon.com, 42 inches or above, to have these extra Apple features. These are people who are not going to be the least bit dissuaded by the idea of buying an external $99 box and hooking
up
one.
And I said the same thing to Cedric, and one of the things he said is, yes, but there's only so much you can do over HDMI. If you really want to have a real interactive unit, you've got to have the TV. You've got to control the whole thing.
If they do something big, if they do like a Kinect-style like motion capture, if they do not just an EyeSight camera perched on the hidden somewhere in the bezel, but they integrate it into the experience incredibly well. If they do something better than four-function clicky remote, if they turn the iPad or the iPhone into not just a Wi-Fi-based remote control, but a level of connection of an interactivity that could not be possible if the TV were not being made by the same company that makes your phone, there's no point in doing it. So if they're going to totally redefine the class, I think, sure, I'll get behind this rumor. I'm just not sure that they are ready to redefine the class of TVs yet.
But I think that also when you look at where they're going with the iCloud, that having that all of the stuff you buy available and being able to tie that. And again, you have Apple TV, but it is a bit of a clue.
Does the TV become an iMac? Does it become your computer?
Yeah, I think it can. I mean, if you look at
iOS. That's the Kinect.
No, but I think for my parents, absolutely. Not for me. I still need my 17-inch. You said
well, we
out earlier.
Right,
but the thing is that I think for a lot of us that are full of geekery, you know, the iPhone, the iPad and Apple TV, but an Apple TV that is unleashed, you know, a completely iOS device. I could have a keyboard sitting on my lap. I used to do this with my Mac Mini. I had a Mac Mini connected to my, 46-inch TV, and I'd sit in the living room, and if I needed to check my mail, I'd go do it, and then I'd go back to whatever I was doing.
Web number in our chat room says, well, one thing, it'd be a lot harder to leave an Apple TV in a bar. No matter how much tequila you have.
I'll throw some kerosene on the fire. What if Apple's dealings with Nuance for speech tech is now
talk to your TV
was intended for the TV and not necessarily for the phone?
Right. Oh.
If this were a thing where I could get grandparents, let's not denigrate grandparents. Let's just say people who want to interact with an alternative device can see email and then simply say, "Dear Beth, nice to hear from you.
Yeah.
I'm on vacation right now, but I'll definitely take a look at that document you attached, and I'll give you some comments later on today. Send mail.
Yeah.
Or please, TV, make the show less crappy, and then it instantly switches to BBC America.
No, you're right. I mean, if you have, that's what you have to do. You have to think of something really outsized that Apple could kind of transform the TV experience. Because I don't think Apple wants to do what we consider a TV today. So an Apple TV would be something that is well beyond what a TV today is. Right?
Well, I think there's a whole other generation coming too. My kids, 2 and 4, will walk up to our TV if the interface is on, you know, the Comcast interface,
and they'll touch it.
They'll touch it, yeah. Expecting something to happen because they sit there.
I don't see a touch TV. I don't want. I don't.
I think it's adding expense where we don't need it.
Yeah, and come on. Look, didn't we get remote control so we wouldn't have to get up? I mean, you don't want to get up. You don't want to get up.
Actually, though, that brings up a question. How do you think that Apple would solve the problem of dealing with Comcast and Verizon and all these other?
Well, that's one of the issues Guest A brings up. Yeah.
Do you think that they would go with a cable card interface, or would they simply say this does not interact with your cable TV in any way?
It'll be a monitor. I think they have to. It's a cord cutter TV. I think it has to be. I mean, unless they do the deals.
My brain is not as good as the brains that are inside the Magic Spaceship in Cupertino.
Exactly.
So I can't come up with answers to these. It's possible that that shows that's a really bad brain to deal with this problem of which.
Right. And well said. I concur.
The biggest challenge here is the data caps.
I bring these up. Yeah, you're right, and that's a big issue. And I think there's a lot of big issues like that, political issues, like dealing with the cable companies. Nobody's going to do cable card. They have control of that. That's a choke point. But I bring this up just so that you can take this and add this to the reel of things Leo said Apple would never in a million years do, and they, of course, do. So we'll see. I mean, October is soon.
Yeah. Again, I'm not saying that people are stupid to have these rumors. I'm saying that I personally
don't
see it.
Yeah, I don't
and
get
I,
it.
And I, you know, I'm stupid about wanting things to happen that I don't think are going to that I know deep down aren't going to happen.
And he still wants a flying car.
Yes, you know, I still want the flying car.
He's got one. He's got one. I finally saw it in his eyes.
Oh, good boy.
He's got the prototype NDA Apple flying car. It's not TVs. Yeah. It's flying cars.
I knew when I was there, I knew that there was something under that tarp. I saw that tarp, and I was like, I wonder if that's the flying car.
And I'm sorry I knocked out that transformer. The afterburners are still a little dodgy. The back thrust is not. I'm sorry. Free Hostess Podcast.
Hey, did you read M.G. Siegler's very interesting article on TechCrunch? Actually, there's been quite a few M.G. Siegler articles that are very interesting on TechCrunch, including his most recent, which he says is maybe my last article on TechCrunch. But that's another story for another day. We'll save that for tomorrow, I guess, for Twig. But he did write an article last week saying, the Amazon tablet is real. I've played with it. Amazon apparently gave him a first look, didn't allow him to take pictures. He describes it as a 7-inch color tablet running Android, but not Android anything you've seen. Amazon has had nothing to do with Google on this, but completely redesigned the Android interface. Looks a little cover flowy. And it is ultimately, he says, the point of it is ultimately to be kind of an entrance into Amazon's commerce. You get free Amazon Prime. You get it for $250, which is a very hot price point. Mm-hmm. Wi-Fi only. He said it's very snappy, very responsive. Only 6 gigabytes of storage. He says this is a move from Amazon to keep this stuff in the cloud as they do currently for things like TV shows and movies. It sounds like he has the inside story here. So I think I'm going to give him credit him with everything being true. What do you think? Is this a big threat? Should be out sometime in the next couple of months.
No. This is exactly the way to kill an iPad. You start off by making the price half of the original. You also decide that we're going to take that free operating system that will save us so many development costs, but we will make it our own version of that operating system because the Google Android team, they have been declared a society in chaos, incapable of self-governing. And if Amazon wants to basically install its own colonial governor to basically get everything running okay, that's exactly the way to do it. Also, for $250, make sure that you're delivering services, not magic.
Right.
You're saying, this is the most awesome. What name do you associate with eBooks? Kindle. Great. This is the most awesome Kindle ever. We also will give you access to music. We'll give you access to movies on demand. We'll give you access to an incredibly good app library that we're going to manage a lot better than Google manages their app library. Also, we're going to give you a 7-inch form factor that you can actually put in your purse or your back pocket. Mm-hmm. We're not going to make you carry around a case and everything. And this is, I cannot wait to get my hands on this. I think this is exactly what this market has been needing.
That's exciting. I haven't heard you so excited in quite a while, Andy. That's great.
And you're the one
who said, and we're quite right, who said that iPad will own 2011, but eventually somebody credible would come along. I think you implied that, and this might be the one.
Yeah, I mean, you do not compete with iPad by trying to make a better iPad.
Right.
You basically allow Apple and all the iPad sales to do your market research for you to figure out what money are they not getting. What money is being left behind on the table. And there is a huge, huge number of people lined up for a device like this, but they're not willing to pull the trigger for $500.
You agree?
So
I think that they're going to do very well with it. I think that
I think people bought both the iPad and the Kindle. I mean, right? They're not going to.
One or the other. I think the issue is, and I noticed my wife got an iPad. She was very excited and then didn't use it as nearly as much as I thought. And the reason is she didn't she didn't get around to activating the 3G, so it didn't work. And I find that the Wi-Fi only is something that really. So I tried playing with that without the 3G for a while. And I don't think I would bother with an iPad if I didn't have 3G. I mean, I think it's the utility of it without a 3G access is very low.
Apple's really pushing, interestingly enough, the educational side. This is their new iPad.
And a new language. Ad. Or just a new word.
I want that app with the Jap.
Maybe you want to know the kanji anatomy.
By the way, Google Body looks
or
just
astronomy.
Like that.
So the funny thing is that
you could master something new.
Carlita gets mad because I make her stop on all the Apple ads.
And I'm like, you get every app.
I want to see that app. I was like, I want that app.
Pause.
Look at
education. That's where they're pushing. It's interesting.
Well, it's going to be huge. I mean, it's what really should be being handed out to. I mean, some kind of tablet makes way more sense than laptops for kids.
Content from iTunes. What does it say? Content from iTunes. Sequence is shortened. Right at the bottom, very quickly.
you want to talk about heartbreak? Friends of mine, their school decided to switch to a tablet-based curriculum, and the tablet they chose was an HP convertible Windows tablet machine. And I was there as they were unpacking this and trying to get, okay, we're downloading SP1. We'll be ready to move on to download of SP2 in about 3 hours.
That's tough on a school because, of course, they have a limited budget. They made what seemed to them a reasonable choice at the time.
When was it?
And they're kind of stuck with it now, right?
This year?
This was just last week.
But they made that decision choice. Probably in April, you know? I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah, well, also, I'm wondering how much of it is based on the admin tools because the talent that they're getting for this initiative involves having two full-time people on staff at the school. But the company that has the contract for this are placing two techs in an office in the school at all times. So you wonder how much of it is not just simply, I know the iPad is a better tool. I know that the apps are kind of slicker. I know it's more futuristic than a Windows tablet. But the fact of the matter is that not only can we staff up really, really well for Windows maintenance, but also we have all these tools for simply saying, here's how we flash and reinstall 30 tablets at the same time overnight to have them ready for new courseware in the morning. So I think there's more infrastructure.
I have a really hard time believing that Windows tablets are going to be less work than iPads.
Is it less work or is it easier to sell?
Yeah, easier to sell.
Easier to sell.
Nobody ever got fired for buying IBM. Just updated. I noticed that the App Store on Apple now has, it'll come up in a second, made especially for Lion section with 48 apps that take advantage, apps enhanced for OS X Lion that take advantage of Lion's hooks.
No pressure.
No pressure. Most of them are Apple apps, by the way. In fact, the first two rows, except for Touch Grind, that's a game. I like that. Reader, we've talked about that before. Evernote, MindNote, Twitter, Sparrow is an email program I've mentioned before. Newsreader called Pulp, Scrivener. These are all apps. Graphic Converter, it's back, baby, and it's Lion enhanced. OmniPlan, Amadeus Pro, which I use, and it has been updated now. It works very nicely with Lion. That's my, I replaced the PC that used to be in the cottage with Audition, Adobe Audition for audio editing with my iMac and Amadeus Pro, and I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, this is some subtle pressure as the Mac App Store becomes bigger. This is the Apple's ability to put stuff on a front page that says you're playing well with our new operating system gives them an enormous amount of leverage to push developers, you know, towards moving forward more quickly.
And of course, it has an advantage for Apple because you can't take advantage of these. Sometimes you can't even run these apps unless you've got the latest version of the operating system.
Right.
You must run Leon.
We're getting repeated requests to talk about Final Cut.
And Apple has decided, in their infinite wisdom, that maybe Final Cut Studio wasn't so bad. You know, it actually responds to us. Unfortunately, it's a little late. But we're building a new workstation, editing workstation. And one of the features we have to have, and we're a Final Cut house, one of the features we have to have is the ability to record to a SAN.
Right.
Which is missing in Final Cut 10.
Right.
So what do we do? Because, well, what we ended up doing is we found a retailer that was still selling old copies of Studio. But right. But sure, the day after we did that, Apple announced, oh, yeah, we'll still sell you Final Cut.
Well, and I think that it makes a lot of sense. There are some serious
issues. Lots of people like us.
Well, there's a lot of heavy lifting that can't be done with Final Cut 10 yet.
Right. And that's important. And if we could have waited, I would have waited because I wanted to save the money.
Well, you have companies like you know, there's a lot of companies in New York and L.A. that have, you know, they have 50 or 100 or 200 workstations that are all on Final Cut
right. That
all have to interact with Final Cut Server, that all have to be working off of that process. And the issue is that they got stuck in a position where the new app will not work and they can't buy anymore. So they want to add another – if they want to add headcount, if they want to, you know, employ more people, they can't do it right now because they don't have the licenses. And so I think that it was obvious that Apple was going to have to come back to that. I will say that I did my first, you know, I've been playing around a lot with Final Cut 10, and we've been doing, the other guys have been doing tests. I did my first Final Cut project over the weekend, and Final Cut 10 project, like, really.
Do you like it?
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I have nothing against 10. In fact, we would probably move to 10 just to save money, but we had to build that workstation now, and it has to work with a SAN.
Oh, no.
Because I think it's Alex, is wandering around. He's like the nomad using
it's
other
Chad.
People's. Is Chad?
Mm-hmm.
He's using other people's stations. We just don't have enough edit stations, so we had to do this.
I've been doing all this testing with Final Cut 10, and I literally had to do this. It wasn't a very complicated edit, but I literally had to do this edit, and I was like, I opened up Final Cut 7, and I was like, this is going to be really hard.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of weird little edits, and so I was like, you know, I'm going to take this into Final Cut 10 and see what happens. And I was using all the compound clips, you know, where I'd slice, compound, and I was reassigning all of these clips together and then being able to go into the individual ones and edit. And it would have taken me 4 or 5 times longer to do it in
Final
Cut
7.
And so it's not – I still can't do multi-cam. I still can't do a bunch of other things that we desperately need. But I can definitely see where Final Cut 10 is, what it's designed for.
And, you know, I went down – thanks to you and Robert Lloyd Lewis, who is a fan of the show. Hi, Robert. And went down to the set of Dexter in Hollywood
awesome.
And watched them do that. And, of course, one of the things I really was interested in doing, and we spent some time with Michael in the edit suites. They have 3 editors. The way they do the show is very interesting. They have 8 days to shoot that show, as you know. You were there. But the editors start working as soon as the footage is done from one day. They start working on it the next day. It's really cool. But they're Avid. They use Avid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tech TV, we used Avid. I mean, for many years, Avid was it. And it runs on a Mac, kind of.
For a large-scale solution, I think Avid is still the best solution.
Well, I'm watching this guy working. Man, he is just lickety-split. And that's exactly what they do. They have 8 days. The editor has basically 10 days or 12 days to cut it. Then the director comes in and has 4 total days to, you know, take that rough cut and polish it and finish it. They have a couple of days for music cues, and then it's out the door. They don't have a lot of time.
Right.
And you know, Avid's quick, Avid's fast. By the way, Bob, thank you so much. He was so generous.
He was. I'd really enjoyed the tour.
We did pretty much the same tour, I think, as you. Because when we got to the prop shop, Bob said, well, show him that vodka that Alex was so excited about.
Black Label Stolichna.
Stolichnaya Elite.
Yes.
And it was full, by the way.
Yes.
Yes.
I noticed that they didn't offer me one either. I was like, look at that.
It was full.
But I finally found some after that. After I saw that, it became
It's so doubly. Cool.
Did you
love what we do, but to see a true Hollywood production operate is just amazing. It's funny because the sound guy, who's also in our chat room, as sound guy, I believe is his handle, was there, and he's recording on, just as you recommended, one of those little sound device boxes. That's the stereo mix for the dailies.
Right.
And then they do an 8-track Fostex device.
Because that's what they had. I mean,
Fostex is kind of an old name, but that's 8 tracks. Mm-hmm. But the director, the assistant director and the sound guy and us, we're all hiding. Because it's such an open set, you know, it's one of those shows where they have a steady cam and they follow Dexter around the set like this, you know. So we're hiding behind a scrim, you know,
right.
Back here, we're back here. Don't see us. And you can hear the actors on the other side doing the thing. It was so much fun watching it on the video tap and just amazing. And the talent.
You never realize the scale of what it takes to do a show like that. And
it's a
every
lot of people.
Single shot, like every cut is so well planned out.
Well, and that's what you really I was really left with the impression of the craft that goes into this. And Bob's built such a good team of people. Mm-hmm. They're all, you know, all independent little wheels in this machine doing their best work, from the craft services to the sound to the director, and it's just really fun to watch. Yeah. Boy, is that amazing! It's a humbling experience.
Yeah, it is.
And it makes me love the show even more because now I know some of the secrets behind it.
It's crazy. After you see the show, it's completely different. Like after I told Bob, I
thought we weren't going to see much because Dexter takes place in Miami, so I figure, well, you might do a few interiors here. The whole thing is done in Hollywood. It's movie magic, kids. I don't know if Bob was. He just kind of swore me to secrecy, but I think it was mostly on the season. I could do one little thing. So, and slap me back the side of the head if this is Bob. I hope I'm not letting in any secret. But you know, it's shot in Miami. The police department's in Miami, second floor in Miami. It's funny because all the trees are the tops of the trees because they're on the second floor. So you just, you know. But then they have a scrim, translate of Miami, the skyline, and but they have to make it kind of feel real and alive, so they put little pieces of plastic on it and then they blow a fan across it and it catches the light and it looks like the water's twinkling. I'm never going to look at that water the same way again.
And now Showtime is like, we're never letting Leo
and
on.
And they do something else magic. Wait a minute. So it's daylight, but if they shine a light through it from back, and even Bob said, I don't know how this works. They shine a light from the back, it's nighttime. Is that magic?
It's magic.
It's amazing.
Leo's come back from the glitter factory.
I got the bug.
He's looking at these windows going,
what can we do?
Some tops.
I got the bug. Yeah. No, it's just so, so fun. I'm sure you're invited. He's a big fan. Robert is also an inventor. He's a guy who invented the OpenX.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Blister pack opener. Yeah. And he gave me a few other things. And he's working on an iPad app.
I'm going to be in LA for the Mac Tech conference in about a month or so.
Oh, you got to go.
Go.
You know, he's already given me the tour and Alex the tour. I'm sure he'll give you one more, but it's just wonderful. It was just so, thank you, Bob. It was incredible. And his nephew, who works at Apple.
Yeah.
I will name Eddie Dabes. He didn't tell us anything, but it was really fun. He said, his nephew said, when I rode the Apple bus in San Francisco, you'd be surprised how many people who listen to Mac Break Weekly on that bus. So hello to all the people in the bus. Yeah. He said his first day, you know, the Google bus pulls up, the Google employees get it. Because all the employees want to live in San Francisco and work in Silicon Valley, right? Google bus pulls up, you know, the eBay bus pulls up, and you know, the guys. And he says, and then the Apple bus arrives. He says, it's a space vehicle, perfectly designed. He says, I know for a fact Steve Jobs oversaw every detail. Leather seats. It's like...
And the wheels are just cosmetic.
Absolutely. It's a patented technology.
And we have a name for
the show.
They were
just sick of getting pulled over for hovering down the highway at 2.5.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We have an email address right now if folks want to email us. MacBreak@twit.tv. Thank you to Eileen for setting that up. So we are accepting email questions, comments, suggestions. We really want to make the show more interactive with you, the audience. So if you want to send us videos or audio clips, that'd be great too. MacBreak@twit.tv. Joel sent us a question regarding episode 262 last week. He said, when Leo was giving his lion tip, he had some beautiful desktop pictures. He says, where'd you get those? Well, I've just been collecting them over the years from a lot of different sources. In fact, Google Plus is a great place because there's so many great photographers on here. And so if I hide all my – let's hide email and see if it – if I can – how do you – oh, golly, I don't want to send a message. Cancel. Oh, never mind. How do you get out of full screen mode? Not that way, apparently. There we go. Thank you. Now hide it. So that's a, these are some storm pictures that somebody posted. Let's hide this one. So I just have a – I like landscapes. So I can't say there's one source. It's just I've been collecting them for years. I have hundreds of them in my little desktop pictures folder. I will give you a tip, though. I remember I talked about spider oak last week as a way to sync this stuff. And I do, in fact, sync my desktop pictures via spider oak. So whatever I put in my desktop pictures folder, which now has 329 desktop pictures, automatically gets synchronized to all of my machines. So all of my machines have lovely desktop pictures. These are the storm pictures I got somewhere. I can't remember where, but these are gorgeous. So that's there's no answer to that question, actually. I've just been collecting them. Anytime I see a great landscape, these are some recent ones I got from Google Plus, and I don't have the photographer's name. I apologize. But just some amazing stuff. Pelican Cove. This is local Pigeon Point. Big Sur. There's some Hawaiian.
It's important that every time you see something that you like, you gotta just right click it and save it.
Right click. That's what
some,
I do.
Someone just a few weeks ago was complimenting me on the this picture that I have behind me right now.
Love that one.
And people will recognize it as, oh, when the Mac 2 came out. Right. This is like one of the signature like mid 80s ray trace, because it's all like things receding into infinity and chrome globes. And was used to like demonstrate, oh, the Mac 2 now it has color and has a color screen of 13 inches, over 256 colors.
It looks a little pixelated, actually.
And it is. Oh, believe me.
The limit of the resolution. Look at that. Yeah, yeah. But that, at the time, that was pretty spectacular.
It was huge because these did not exist. This shape did not exist in nature before it was
right.
called into.
It's amazing.
And someone asked me where I got it, and I can say I don't know. It was in a folder of I was cleaning out an old machine at one point. And I saw this folder called Pictures, and as usual, cleaned it all out. And oh, at some point, I came across that. It's probably off of one of the Apple history pages. But yeah, if you don't get in that habit, you don't have cool things to use as your desktop.
And that's where iCloud will be great, or any Dropbox or any synchronization tool, because all it doesn't matter what Mac I'm on, and I have several, half a dozen of them. If I see a picture, I save it to the desktop pictures folder, and I know that folder is being synchronized across
all my Macs. I take pictures of everything I'm trying to remember. Like, constantly wandering around like, if I see a billboard I like or anything else. Not just like,
if
I
were as good a photographer as you, I'd just take my own desktop pictures.
Oh, no, but no, what I'm saying is I take desktop pictures, but I mean, when you're talking about just, I just remember the world through my iPhone, because right. I sit there and I go, I need to remember that phone number. I took just a picture of my passport a couple
years
ago.
Evernote's good for that.
And it's the only way I got out of France.
Because you had a picture.
I had a picture
of the
passport.
Very smart.
Yeah, it was like, I just did it kind of, it was one of those things, like I was waiting around for a flight, and I was like, I think I'm
always
take a picture with my iPhone.
Evernote's really good for that. You can take a picture and it stores it, and that also synchronizes.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a break. We got a Lion tip, an iOS tip, and we've got some picks of the week too, but I want to first tell you about FreshBooks. I'll tell you what, if you are a freelancer and you do invoicing, this you got to know about. It is beautiful. It's basically a web app, but it's very Mac-ish, very comfortable. I've been using it since 2004 for my invoices. It'll do automatic invoices. Better yet, these email invoices with your logo, very professional looking, also have a Pay Leo Now button. Well, I wish they all said Pay Leo Now, but they say Pay Me Now, of course. And you can your clients can pay you via PayPal or Authorize.net or 11 other online payment services. It really is fantastic. You can even set up automatic payments, which is pretty cool. They'll send out paper invoices for an additional fee, stamp it and print it and mail it. Automatic ticklers and follow-ups, so you don't have to worry about late clients. But I think in general people pay you a lot faster because it's such an easy way to pay. And if you do time and expenses, their iPhone, iPad app and their web app will make it so much easier. You just keep track on the iPhone and it automatically goes right into the invoice. So that's cool. So here's the deal. I want you to try FreshBooks right now. The free trial, up to three clients free. Once you try it, you can upgrade, of course, to many more clients, 25 clients, $20 a month. Takes about a minute to set up an account, and the first three are free at FreshBooks.com. And don't forget, every week, FreshBooks is giving away a birthday cake to one of our audience members. It doesn't have to be your birthday to win the cake.
It's yummy.
You just have to sign up for FreshBooks and mention that you heard it on Mac Break Weekly. FreshBooks.com. It makes invoicing easier. And take my word for it, I used it for years. Now it is time for, and if we can do this quickly, I'd appreciate it because we're getting ready for a Twit photo in just a minute or two. First, let's start with you do iOS or Lion? I can't remember.
iOS.
Alex Lindsay's iOS tip of the week.
So here's my iOS tip of the week.
He's got his iOS-er.
I got my iOS tool here, and the thing, all I want to say is that the iOS tip of the week is to remember, and this comes back to the Apple thing that we were just talking about, is that you...
always remember not to forget.
Always remember that your Find Your iPhone is not on when you buy it.
Oh.
So this is my wife misplaced her phone, and I just had someone misplace their iPad over last week during Dreamforce. And we actually found it. I said, do you have your Find Your iPhone on? And he's like, yeah,
so
I have
great.
My Find. And we saw it in the Westin, and then we saw it moving around. It turned out someone else had picked it up for him. But the point is that you know where it is. You have to turn this on. So what that means is you have to go to mobile. You have to sign up with a Mobile Me. Now, you don't have to have Mobile Me. You can use your iTunes account.
That's nice. It's free now.
It's free. So you can do your iTunes account, and then you're going to go into your Mobile Me settings, and you're going to turn Find My iPhone on. Now, you still need to log in. It's, you know, it's a secure login. It's as secure as anything else. It is definitely worth turning on. I lost my – when they first did this, I turned it on one of my phones. And I literally came up to a cab that I had left my phone in and said, you have my phone. Mm. I had to follow him. I had to track him down.
But you might not have gotten it had you not done that right away. So it's good.
So the thing is that you, yeah, I mean,
trying
to
call right
him
away.
Everything else.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
The thing is Find My iPhone. You got to turn it on. It's not, you can't turn it on later. And that's my big tip.
Absolutely. And parents, it's a great way to track your teenagers.
I didn't want to talk about that.
Don't tell them. But it's true. It's true. Find My iPhone is really fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Life saving.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't you find your car once where you forgot where you'd parked it, but you had your iPhone in it, so you've just followed your iPhone?
No, I didn't have my iPhone.
Had you had Find My Car.
It would have saved me a lot of
embarrassment. That's right. The police found your car. Never mind.
A block away at the liquor store.
Whoops. my car has been stolen. Sir, we have it just down the street. See? Look out your window. Over here. Andy and Akko's Lion tip.
This is a Lion-specific tip and something that I wanted. It's such a simple thing, but something I've wanted for so many years. QuickTime Player, which is one of the unsung heroes of the free apps you get with Lion, added a new feature to their export list. Now, in addition to exporting a video into a whole bunch of different YouTube formats, it can also export it as an audio file. So, and why would you want to export something as an audio file? Well, because... you know what? You may have seen Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars before, so it's possible that after having seen it 30 times, you don't actually need the pictures to follow the story. And so essentially it gives you the ability to take all of these video files that you've converted from DVD and on a selective basis convert them into essentially audiobooks. Just last week, I converted one of my favorite old movies, Shadow of the Thin Man, just stripped away all the video,
what
turned
a good
into a very
idea.
Compact, like... turned to a very compact, like 90-minute, beautiful radio play with music and Shemp Howard in the background. All these really, really cool things. And it is a great, cool, just built-in feature of QuickTime Player. QuickTime Player does a whole bunch of really cool things. I'm sure that in the coming months, I will be dipping into QuickTime Player as for tips because it just does a million things and it's free and it will often save you from having to spend $4.99 on a simple one-use utility that you might get from the App Store. But just the ability to convert videos from sound and vision to just sound it completely extends what you can do with your media content. Now, it's not going to work on protected content, so it's not as though you can buy an episode of House and then strip out the audio and just use that as an unprotected MP3 or MP4 file. But, you know, you're not really buying stuff online, are you? Anyway, you're buying the DVD and ripping it.
Of course you are.
So the QuickTime Player is going to be the great solution.
I want to do that. I have actually all the DVDs of The Thin Man. I got the Thin Man set. What a great idea. Convert them to audio and I can listen on my iPod. Thank you, Andy Anatko. Now time for our tips of the week. I'll start, and it's a quick tip. Sonos this morning sent out an alert to everybody using a Sonos player. If you've gotten tired as a Lion user of getting this message, you are running a version of OS 10 that may be incompatible with Sonos. Don't worry. Fear not. Go to the Sonos support page. You won't get the automatic update, by the way. You have to actually click this. At least it's been my experience. Click this, and you'll get 3.5.2 of the Sonos desktop controller, which now works beautifully with Lion. You'll also have to update all your Sonos hardware. I think we've talked about Sonos before. I'm a big fan. In fact, we have 6 Sonos players in our studio, which is great for party mode. including the S5 and S3 player on the front desk. It's just, I love Sonos. So if you've been worried or suffering with Lion and Sonos, good news, they have updated it. And now, Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So my pick of the week is a program called Playback Pro.
Yes.
And this is a program that I bought yesterday, or not yesterday, last week, before we started doing Dreamforce. We've been doing a lot of our lower thirds and graphics with Keynote, actually, and we realized the complexity of our show was going to be way too much. And so we got Playback Pro, and Playback Pro is basically the standard in presentation, like so companies doing presentations and so on and so forth to play back videos. What it does is it simply allows you to build a large playlist. So you can build a huge playlist of all the movies you want to play, and you can decide how they're linked. Do I at the end of this movie, do I want to go to the next one? Do I want to stop?
Cool.
Do I want to?
We could use this to do our reruns.
Yes, you could. So anyway, but basically we were running our lower thirds with it. We'd have stacks of movies. So we'd have like 8 movies that we want to play, and we're simply link. You can have them crossfade between the two as they link. And what it's doing is it's caching that software. It's caching the movie into RAM so that it's not dropping frames and so on and so forth. The other thing that it does really well is that it takes over your second display output. So it says, okay, I don't care what the system says you should be doing.
It's mine.
It's going to be exactly 720p, or it's going to be exactly.
Smart.
This has always been a problem that we've had, is we hook up and we can't figure out, we have to do this dance of trying to set up our second display so that our playback will go into our mixer correctly, or it'll go into a projector. This just says this is the way it's coming out, and it does it top down. And so it is. I think that the basic version is $300 or $400 or $200 or $300, and the pro version I think is $600. And you just have to decide which ones you want as far as how it goes. But if you're looking for something like this, we hit it really, really hard last week. And it totally saved us, And so,
We started using Tools on Air, which is a very expensive Swiss television automation system,
right?
To do our reruns, but this could do it.
The advantage that Tools on Air has is that it
we can do quartz. We got a quartz layer, baby.
Well, you have quartz layers. You have all these. This won't let you do that. Tools on Air does is let you add all of those quartz layers on top. If you're just simply doing playback though,
video after video, which is really essentially all we need to do
right now.
Yeah.
And the advantage that this has over Tools on Air is also very much built for a structured schedule. I'm going to start at top 1 o'clock, and I'm going to go to 2, and then I'm going to have holes at certain points. This one just stacks up, and then you just hit links. And what we had is
actually do a better job for us, since all of our shows are at variable lengths.
Well, and then what we would do is we had a whole bunch of sweepers that we wanted to pop in. So what we would do is we'd have 3 movies, and then I'd have a sweeper.
Right.
And then I'd have another 3 movies, and I'd link them all down. And you can have them loop or link or stop or whatever you want. And it turned out to be just a great application. So anyway, that's it.
DT Playback. And finally, Andy Anatko with his pick of the week. Andrew?
My pick of the week is the Comixology app for iPad. For 2 important reasons. Number one, they've done some updates that make it was already a really good app for buying and reading comics. I like it because it's a very, very iPad looking app. It's not just we have a business plan that says that we have to have a tablet presence in the marketplace, and therefore we decided to design a layout that could be deployed both as Flash on a website and also blah blah. No, they developed an actual damn iPad app here, and also they also were very. It's amazing that I've been a comics reader for since I was in high school, it's amazing that when I talk about these apps, I mostly talk about here's how you screw it up. And when I say nice things about apps, it's like here is how you did not screw this up. Marvel Comics, for instance, online has this really stupid reader that says, "No, we want to make digital comics with Zazz and camera moves and animation." The Comixology app, it just, if you want to have it navigate from panel to panel for you, it will do that for you. But if you just want to read it as a comic book, just turn the pages. It will let you turn the pages. And when you have a double page splash like this, it will automatically go boom like that. You can also, of course, zoom in, zoom out for better reading. So great app. But the other thing is that DC Comics is sort of a piggyback recommendation here, because they are the first company that seems to have decided that this iPad thing could really take off. You know, given enough time and given support from a large company, maybe tablets are going to be a good, or maybe digital publishing is a good way to distribute their content.
I don't know.
So they've done two really huge things. Number one, they've decided that starting in September, every single comic they sell on the newsstand and in comic book shops will be available day and date available for Comixology.
You're kidding. That's great news.
So Marvel has been sort of taking baby. I'm sorry, I don't mean this to be anti-Marvel. I'm just saying I don't think they're doing things correctly.
Right.
Marvel has been taking baby steps. Well, maybe this Spider-Man book. We'll let you have this Spider-Man book, but how about a comic that came out 20 years ago? Yeah, we'll give you that. We'll make sure that this run is only available in our special Flash player that you have to purchase via subscription. I'm like, you know what? Why even bother? If I don't know that a comic is available, I'm not going to keep coming back. There's a store nearby that I don't shop at because I will go on Wednesday, new comic book day, and say, oh, we didn't order that. How about like Superman? Well, we only ordered two copies and we opened an hour ago and now we're all sold out. That's why I don't go to the store, and that's why I don't use the Dark Horse Comics app. I don't buy Marvel comics, not because I don't like them, but because why am I going to bother every week to see what they decided to post? With DC, they decided every single thing we sell is going to be available online. The actual shipping date of everything else.
That's
now
smart.
To that double smart, which is kind of interesting. They also decided to reboot their entire universe so that it all starts over again in September. So if you pick up Justice League number one, you don't have to figure out, well, why are Nazis in robot costumes attacking Wonder Woman, and why does Wonder Woman not think that she's Wonder Woman? Why does she think that she's a teenage girl who was orphaned? There's not all this backstory going on. Essentially, everything starts all over again from issues number one. Batman is still Batman. Superman is still Superman. It's just that they're starting fresh without any of the baggage that's been built up over the past 5 or 10 years. Every single major comic book company now, unfortunately, what really sells are these mega crossover events where you can't pick up a comic and have any idea what's going on unless you've been reading this you've been reading all 20 issues per month, but they're involved in the storyline. So this is a very deliberate chance to simply say, we appreciate that digital is going to be a bigger and bigger presence as the years go by. Maybe not initially, but it's going to be a big deal. The sooner we really commit to it, the better. And also, we're going to simply say that if you have been thinking about getting into comics, September of 2011 is a really good month to get
in. That's kind of cool. That's great.
Anything with the DC logo on it, it's brand new. You don't have to know anything about it except for what we will present to you. The Justice League is really, really great.
It looks good, I got to say.
It's drawn by Jim Lee, who is the most hellacious. He is the James Cameron of artists, where if you give him 22 pages of solid action, he will absolutely sell every single panel of it. There are other books where you can have Nazis piloting huge robot skeleton armor, laying waste to thousands of people, and it seems like an indie movie. That's not the way that Jim Lee, that's not how he wrote. He will sell every single panel of it. So that's the first issue that I actually bought, and that basically said, okay, this reboot might work out well for me and my interests. I will follow your future career with considerable interest, Mr. Lee.
And I have to say, reading a comic on an iPad, now I'm not a big, you're the comic book guy, but it's a pretty satisfying experience for me. I like it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know the ink doesn't rub off on your fingers or anything, but I like it.
I actually prefer it. Because it's the one piece of entertainment that I can't get digitally, which means that it's the one piece of entertainment that I'll buy my comics on Wednesday or Thursday whenever I happen to come to the store. I will read them within 1 or 2 hours, and then probably I will not be able to read them ever again until it comes out in trade paperback form like 3 months later, because you just can't keep these things. I mean, if I were a bigger nerd than I am, I would have... Okay, board and bag this one. Okay, here's the reading copy. I will file this numerically. Unfortunately, it's like after so many years of having like long box after long box of comics that I don't read ever again, it's like, okay, tell you what, if it's really, really great, I'll put it in this special box. Otherwise, I'll throw it away. Now I can be on a plane and finish whatever Kindle book that I wanted to finish. I've got 30 minutes left, and I can go back and read some Gail Simone books. I can go back and read one of her Wonder Woman arcs, or I can go back and read some Sandman, and it will just work out hunky dory. I really want to reward DC Comics for finally saying we are going to commit to this, even if we don't sell a whole lot to begin with. On principle, every comic that we sell will be available digitally. The only downside is that the cover price is the same, so you're still spending $3.99. for this comic. But okay, I'll take that. Also, it's all being held. It's all being done through in-app purchasing. So you tap one button, you tap a confirmation button. If you're signed into your iTunes account, it gets downloaded. You start reading it. It could not be simpler.
Andy Nocco, comic nerd. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. Celestial Waste of Bandwidth is his personal site, www.cwob.com. But, of course, you can read his professional works in the esteemed Chicago Sun-Times. You can
also, Pulitzer.
Yes. Also follow him on Twitter, IHNATKO.
Correct.
Oh. Alex Lindsay is the man in charge of the Pixel Corps, that great guild of 3D artists working and learning together. PixelCore.com and PixelCore.com/live is every Thursday night the place to go.
Yep, and we're going to be talking about how we did what we did with Dreamforce.
So that'll be fun.
Talking about some of the studio stuff,
show
a couple photos, and talk about how we it's part of Gear Media Tech Live. So we're going to this Thursday at 6. Follow either me or PixelCore. Me if you want the silly stuff, and PixelCore if you just
me
want
being
Alex
Lindsay. At Alex Lindsay.
But if you want to hear just the announcements, follow PixelCore.
At Pixel Corps.
Yes.
C-O-R-P-S.
Yes.
No E for the Dexter fans. Thank you all for being here. We do this show 11 a.m., or when Leo gets here, Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern at live. Actually, I don't have to say live anymore at our new site, twit.tv. It's all there. Everything's there, including our live video, twit.tv. 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and that would be 1800 UTC if you're outside the U.S. It's easier to figure that out. And, of course, you can always get it after the fact because we record it and we take the audio and video and make it available to you at absolutely no charge.
That's crazy.
I know. It's nuts on iTunes and everywhere else. Well, it's thanks to our great advertisers that we can do that. I hope you'll join us next week. But now you better get back to work because break time, my friend, is over.